الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله وسلم على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه ومن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين وسلم تسليما كثيرا أما بعد. We praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and we ask Allah to exalt the mention and grant peace and send his salutations upon the Prophet Muhammad, upon his companions and all those who follow them on the path of righteousness until the end of time. The term love has a flavor of its own. Many people are fascinated with the term love, just because it signifies love. And love is a controversial topic. It depends on how you view love, or the consequences of love, or the human approach to love. Human beings tend to look for anything which may stir their emotions. Meaning they look for things which they would like to love. So people who love nature will go out sightseeing, hoping to find something which they love. You find people standing at the ocean and facing the ocean without the Titanic theme, in mind, the scene in mind. But they stand there and say, oh, okay, now there's a microphone. Say, I love this. Right? And some people have the same feeling when they see a bunch of sheep, if they happen to be shepherds. Oh, I love this. So human beings are always looking for something to love. Now, that could be good and that could be bad. Love is not necessarily a bonus. Love can destroy, or love can help grow. So this is why it is important to analyze the concept of love in Islam. We have to look at it from an Islamic perspective, because Islam is the religion which has been revealed as the final religion. Therefore, it's comprehensive. It covers all aspects of life, all issues human beings faced or might face until the end of time. And love cannot be something that Islam will ignore. Otherwise, Islam will be deficient. So we find that Islam deals extensively with love. So is love something which is forbidden in and of itself? Does Islam tolerate love in any way, shape, or form? Now you tell me. What do you think? There's love in Islam?
Islam loves love.
Islam loves love. Hey, that's a good one, man. Put a slogan over here next time. Islam loves love. Oh, but what if someone's name was Love? Then we have a problem, huh? Now there are people, I know a brother in Jeddah's name is Zakaria Love. His last name is Love. So then you might have an issue there. But if no one's name is Love, either the first or the last name, then we don't find anything which is against love. Unless the love we are speaking about is one which is unhealthy. How can love be unhealthy? It's one of two things. Either the love which we are discussing is divinely supported, in which case, go ahead, go all out, enjoy it, fall in love over and over and over again on daily basis until you get tired of it. But that's not possible, because you love love, so you're not going to get tired of falling in love. Or it is not divinely supported, which means there's another entity behind it. If something is not divine, it's not from Allah, who is it going to be from? Iblis. Just to simplify our lives, either it is accepted and endorsed by the religion of Allah, therefore we have no issue. If it is not, then it has to fall in another category. And there's no other category except that of Satan, who also built their project on love. So it's love on both ends. Everybody's trying to deal with love. But which one will turn out to be the successful one? It depends on the kind of love that is being propagated and the kind of love which they are calling for. So if people were to use the proper channel to display love, then that would be lovely. Right? That would be very lovely if we use these channels. But sadly, we find that human beings tend to go off track. And we find that there are examples that we can probably relate to, examples that we have experienced in our own lives, where love led to misery, and love led to hatred, and love led to bloodshed. And so many calamities have befallen human beings over love. Romeo and Juliet. Huh? I mean, come on. Talk about love. Hey, you don't commit suicide for love. Because once you die, it's over. You know what I'm saying? If that love had any meaning, and it led you to the point of ending your own life, then you've terminated the chances of any other love ever. Because you're done. So we see that according to that story, that it ended with some death, which is not a good thing. Now, first and foremost, when we tackle this issue then, as we said, from the Islamic lens or glasses, we have to first establish together a hierarchy of love. We don't love everything and everyone the same. This includes parents. Parents who love children, deep down, even though they love all their children equally, in the sense that they love them as children, there's usually one that is favored over others emotionally. Not in terms of gifts. In terms of gifts, you're going to give everyone the same thing, or you're going to give them equally. But you know, they say the last one, for example, is the one that is usually loved the most. He's the most spoiled, or she is the most spoiled, the youngest of the children. And so that young person will get a particular kind of attention and love that his siblings cannot find. So we see among human beings, from a natural point of view, we deal with love in a different way. So we have a hierarchy. So we as Muslims, when we speak of the hierarchy of love, who do you think should be on top of the pyramid? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Of course, we mean conceptually, not Allah Azza wa Jalla himself. So loving Allah should be the priority. If anyone were to be loved in the ultimate sense, blindly, and blindly means you're willing to do anything for the loved, for that loved entity, or for your beloved, if anyone really deserves that in the ultimate sense, it is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. One may ask why. I cannot possibly love something that is not tangible. I have to have an image of the one I love. And you asking me to love something which I've never seen, never really experienced in a physical sense. Yes, I know he's out there, but you know, how can that love be developed? And that's an understandable question. And there's a very practical and logical answer to that as well. Look at it from the perspective of favors. Favors and appreciation. Let's assume that you got to have a friend. You became, as they say, pen buddies with someone whom you were communicating with via letters. That person was in some other country, and they wrote a letter to you, then you wrote a letter back, and there was these letters back and forth. And then that person sends you a letter with a check for $100,000. Do you think you would love that person? 100%. 100%. Even though you've never seen that person, never really spent time, physical time with them, all it was a bunch of words going back and forth. Could be an email, okay, a few lines. And as soon as they send you the money, this person will automatically occupy the, you know, the most loving part of your heart. And if someone were to speak about this person ill, you would jump to defend them. Say, hey, no. Don't speak about this person, man. You just send me a $100,000 check. You must be kidding me. I'm willing to hate everybody in the world, but I cannot possibly hate this person. Human beings are like this. You will develop a form of love for that person because of a favor they have done for you. It could be on a much lesser scale. Someone can give you a pen that you cherish. And then you would love this person more than other student who may be your classmate, because that one has done you a favor that the other one has not. Okay? So if this is the case, and that is the case, then we should understand the favors of Allah upon us in this sense, so that we can develop this form of love. So if, forget about $100,000. Everything you've ever had, including yourself, including your parents, including everything, is from Allah. وَمَا بِكُم مِّن نِعْمَةٍ فَمِنَ اللَّهِ. As Allah said, and there isn't a single favor which you have except that it is from Allah. Your ability to analyze this speech right now and understand it so that it may affect you if Allah has intended to do so is also from Allah. You have no control on your own. You could attend the lecture with the intention to benefit, and if Allah does not have that written for you, then you will not attain any benefit. You could do your homework to pass the exam, or you can study hard to pass the exam, and then you get one question that you just simply cannot answer, and therefore you will fail. Or you could do less study because you were busy looking after your mother or something, and then you get the easiest questions, which is something you've always known, and you get the highest grade in class. Even in the intricate aspects of life, it's all under the control and management of Allah Azza wa Jal. So then, if we were just to look at the favors of Allah upon us, it becomes a natural consequence to love Allah. The same way we would have loved someone who would give us a check for $100,000. But what Allah gave us cannot be enumerated. وَإِن تَعُدُّ نِعْمَةَ اللَّهِ لَا تُحْصُوهَا. If you were to enumerate and count the favors of Allah, the favor of Allah, you will be unable to do so. What are you going to count? You know, from the time you were in your mother's womb until the delivery, until the early stages of nursing, until, you know, became an infant and then a toddler and then so on and so forth. Who was looking after you all the time? How many times have you fallen while you were a kid? And who protected you from falling in a particular way where you would die or get run over by a car? Or, you know, so many things happen in our childhood. And yet we are alive now. Who is looking after us in every single incident? Allah. So we have to realize this, because if we don't think about it, which is the norm, we forget, then we will become heedless of Allah Azza wa Jal. And therefore there will be no love, if any. However, when this is thought of properly, then we will feel ashamed of ourselves if we don't have this love. You feel that I'm guilty. I'm guilty for not having developed this love, because I haven't reflected on the favors of Allah Azza wa Jal enough. And of course, there are many ayat in the Quran to this effect, which speak about the love of Allah Azza wa Jal. For example, Allah said, in regards to those who turn away from His religion, فَسَوْفَ يَأْتِ اللَّهُ بِقَوْمٍ يُحِبُّهُمْ وَيُحِبُّونَهُ. Then verily Allah Azza wa Jal shall bring about a group of people, a qawm, a nation, يُحِبُّهُمْ, Allah will love them, وَيُحِبُّونَهُ, and they will love Allah. So when we don't live up to the standards of Allah, which He revealed in Islam, no problem. Next. That's just, I'm simplifying it. If one of us doesn't meet the requirements of Allah, it's easy. Next. Meaning, you move on and someone else will be brought instead. Will that decrease the dominion of Allah in any way, shape or form? No. Will that, you know, minimize the glory of Allah and His majesty? No, everything will be the same. The malaika will continue to glorify the name of Allah, and the creation will continue to be in a state of submission to Allah, and we as individuals would be the ones who lost. Period. So the point here is, يُحِبُّهُمْ وَيُحِبُّونَهُ. They love Allah, Allah loves them, and they love Him back. And when Allah Azza wa Jal spoke about those who take besides Allah rivals, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَن يَتَّخِذُ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَنْدَادًا يُحِبُّونَهُمْ كَحُبِّ اللَّهِ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَشَدُّ حُبًّا لِلَّهِ. And among people are those who take besides Allah rivals, whom they love equally the way they love Allah. They love these rivals the same way they love Allah. However, this is the state of those who make that kind of association. When Allah wanted to describe the believer, He said, وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, and those who have already believed, أَشَدُّ حُبًّا لِلَّهِ, they are stronger in love for Allah. They love Allah more. Therefore, any entity, anything which may come and become an obstacle or a hurdle or a barrier between them and the love of Allah, they eliminate that thing on the spot. They get rid of it. This is one ayah. This is the second ayah. And the ayat are many. قُلْ إِن كُنْتُمْ تُحِبُّونَ اللَّهِ فَاتَّبِعُونِي يُحْبِبْكُمُ اللَّهِ Say, if you truly love Allah, then follow me, Allah will love you. So we find that Allah Azza wa Jal calls and uses the term love in the Quran often. So when we speak about love, the Quran is full of love. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُحْسِنِينَ Verily Allah loves the good doers or those who excel. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُتَّقِينَ Allah loves those who are pious. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الصَّابِرِينَ Verily Allah loves those who are patient. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ التَّوَّابِينَ وَيُحِبُّ الْمُتَطَهِرِينَ He loves those who constantly repent and those who purify themselves. And the list goes on in the Quran about Allah loving. Loving people with particular qualities. And this is being, we are being invited to take part of this love. And this is all embodied in the name of Allah, Al-Wadood. Al-Wadood, you know, wood is a level of love which is above the average. When you have wood for someone, it's like khilla. It's like khilla is a friend of yours who's so close to you, like takhallala ba'duhum ba'dan. Like there's an integration between the two. You've almost like went into each other because of the level of friendship that you have. So Khalilur Rahman is Ibrahim alayhi salam. And the Prophet ﷺ, and he said, if I were to take a Khalil from among the humans, it would have been Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. So this is a level of friendship which is above the average. Similarly, when it comes to the concept of love, we have wood. Wood which is affection. Love with a lot of affection associated with it. And one of the names of Allah is Al-Wadud. This is important because we find that sometimes when Islam is spoken about, it's spoken about as a religion which does not entertain love. Or they say, you know, we don't find anywhere in the Quran that Allah Azza wa Jal has the name Al-Muhib, for example, the lover, the one who loves. We say, we don't need that. That's a weak term. That's a weak attribute to be given to Allah in this sense. A more comprehensive one is Al-Wadud, which is that immense amount of love, that affectionate kind of love, and that is one of the qualities of Allah Azza wa Jal which we believe in the Quran. Sahih? So then, love is there. Whether it is on our part towards Allah Azza wa Jal or the other way around. You know, we used to have a rule. I always make this joke. It's sometimes, look, when you make jokes, it's either successful so that people have a good laugh, or you look bad, right? But that's the risk you have to take as a speaker. You know, I've given jokes before where I'm the only one enjoying it. And everybody's looking at me like, what does this guy want? Don't invite him again. But, you know, hey, I hope that doesn't happen tonight. But anyways, one of the jokes is if your phone rings during the lecture, then we will confiscate it, okay? We will confiscate the phone, and you may start feeling bad that you've taken away my phone, and that's not fair. And I'll give you the glad tidings that we will sell it, inshallah, and then we will use it for da'wah. So have that niyyah, in case you lost the phone, is going to serve a good purpose. But if you love your phone enough, put it on silent, okay? And I'm not picking on you, brother. I'm just saying generally. So because the phone ring usually is a major bummer. Anyways, so we say that love then is two-way. The love of Allah towards the creation, which are qualities that we have to attain, and the other way around. So if you want to, I don't want to make this the topic of the lecture because there are other things I would like to discuss, but if you want to know what are the qualities which we are supposed to have as believers to attain the love of Allah, then go on YouTube and type Allah calls on Jibreel. Allah calls on Jibreel alayhi salam, and there's a whole lecture dedicated to this very topic. The qualities which Allah loves, which we should strive to acquire to attain the love of Allah, because that's the most valuable thing one can have. Next in line, after the love of Allah Azza wa Jal, who should be next in terms of love? The Prophet Muhammad alayhi salam. Again, one may say, why? You've never seen him. You've never met him. He hasn't given you anything directly. He never spoke to you. And how in the world can you love someone at that degree, even though there's never been a real communication between the two of you. And we say that's easy. Love is not based on mere physical meetings with human beings. Love actually, it escalates and it transcends above this limited fashion or limited understanding, because there's a physical love, you know, which the people are stuck on, really. And that will have its own segment, inshallah, in the lecture. The physical aspect of love. But love actually is beyond that. And therefore, we can have love to the Prophet ﷺ. Why? Because he was chosen by Allah. So first, we love him because Allah chose him out of the many, many, many human beings he could have chosen for that final message. Secondly, he is the means through which Allah saves the believers from the torment of the hellfire. So what are the means being used? The Prophet Muhammad ﷺ. Thirdly, we should love the one who loves us. And we know for a fact from the traditions that the Prophet ﷺ loved the believers, whether the companions who were around him or those who were yet to come, which is ourselves. And he said in a hadith of the Sahaba, I would love to have met my brothers. So the Sahaba said, Ya Rasulullah, we are your brothers. You wish to meet your brothers, and we are your brothers sitting in your company. He said, La antum ashabi. No, you are my companions. My brothers will be people who will come after, who would believe in me even though they have never seen me. So those who saw the Prophet ﷺ had that privilege. But those who came after, such as ourselves, and never got to see him yet believed in him, there's a specific kind of love in the heart of the Prophet ﷺ towards these individuals, whom we ask Allah to make us amongst. So that's a very big deal. So because there's that mutual love from the Prophet ﷺ, we should in turn love the Prophet ﷺ. This is besides the fact that he explicitly said, لا يؤمن أحدكم حتى أكون أحب إليه من والدي من ولده ووالده والناس أجمعين أو كما قال صلى الله عليه وسلم. None of you shall truly believe until I become more dear and more beloved to him than his father, his son, and the whole of mankind. And you all know the hadith of Umar, who said to the Messenger of Allah, "You are more beloved to me than everybody except myself." Naturally, you love yourself. If you don't believe me, just remember how much time you spend behind the mirror. Staring at yourself, fixing every little, eyelash and eyebrow and hair, and checking out what's on your ear. And people do funny things behind the mirror. Some 10, 15 minutes, the husband is waiting outside, in the car about to go crazy, and the lady's upstairs, checking the finer things in her face. That's just a form of loving oneself, which is fine, provided that it doesn't distract us from the obligations. Don't miss salah while you're checking your hair. Okay, that's not a good idea. I'm not trying to pick on the ladies. Sometimes the brothers are worse. In fact, I know brothers who are worse. But, because you're in front of me, I'm going to skip it. So like I was saying, Umar said, everybody except myself. He told him, La ya Umar, no. Nope, that's not enough. Until I am more beloved to you than yourself. So Umar radiallahu anhu was an intelligent man. And he was a straightforward man. You all know Umar and his character. He wasn't about those who beat around the bush. He was just blunt. So he reflected on the matter and he realized that, hey, I wouldn't attain belief, proper belief, until I achieve that. And so he reviewed with himself his position and he rectified it on the spot. It wasn't fake. When he told him instantly, okay, now you are more beloved, O Messenger of Allah, and he told him, Al-An ya Umar, meaning now you have reached that level of security. That level of safety. It was a genuine statement from Umar, and he realized that truly the Prophet ﷺ is more dear than anyone else. And so nowadays, let me just connect this with real life. How does that affect us? Okay, now we don't see the Prophet ﷺ. So what the Sahaba did in terms of displaying their love and affection is not possible for us. Yani, during his life, anything he would do, they would fight over the remnants of the water when he would make wudu. They would go to extreme in trying to be near him and trying to protect him with their lives. That's why you hear him often say, Bi abi wa ummi anta ya Rasulullah. Meaning, I'm willing to sacrifice my own parents for your preservation, for your safety, O Messenger of Allah. They did not only say that, they meant that. But do you have the option today? No. So what are the options we have? You cannot meet him to hug him and kiss him and tell him how much you love him. That's impossible. Unless someone believes something else, huh? On Hadrat or something, on you know, the day of Maulid, but we're not going to go there. That's not possible, right? So how do you think we should or we could express this love now? Yes, sir. Practice in the Sunnah. Look, very simple. Yeah, Jama'at al-Khair, we have Bukhari, rahimahullah, and Muslim, and Tirmidhi, and Nasai, and Abu Dawood, and Ibn Majah, and Ibn Abi Shayba, and the collectors of Hadith and Abu Dawood are many who spend their whole lives very often in only to collect these Ahadith. Huh? So we have generations of Muslims who dedicated their whole lives for a narration to come to one of us. And nowadays, with the facilitation of finding this information through the internet and all the modern technology, the hadith comes to us and we fail in loving it the way we would have done had the Prophet ﷺ been present. Yani, if the Messenger of Allah came to one of us and told them, brush your teeth or use the siwak, okay, because it is mataratun lilfam wa mardatun lilrab. It purifies your mouth and it pleases your Lord. And he came and you were sitting here. Would any one of us dare to say, it's okay, next time? No way! No way. If you had, yani, even if one of us was 99% hypocrite and 1% believer, that 1% will say, shh, I get up and do something. Borrow a toothbrush from someone. Just get the job done. Why? Because there's this feeling of you're receiving instructions from the Messenger of Allah and you can't really not carry it out. Even if it is not obligatory. Even if what he's saying is just a voluntary, it's just an advice. It's a piece of advice which you otherwise could have accepted or rejected. You see what I'm, but because we don't have that, but think in the same manner when we receive the hadith, and I'm not dealing with the recommendations or with the optional or voluntary, I'm dealing with the obligations. When we receive them, how do we deal with them? Do we have sami'na wa ata'na or sami'na wa asayna wal 'iyadhu billah? We hear and obey versus we hear and disobey. So the expression of love is possible until now by believing in the instructions and acting upon the instructions of the Prophet ﷺ. Third, who should be next in the hierarchy? Huh? Are you guys falling asleep? Anyone who falls asleep will have to also give us something. Yes? Parents? Mother? Why the mother, not the father? Okay, I'm just testing you. Because many people say, okay, both. No, not every time someone calls you, you change your position. If you believe in something, you have to stick to it till the end. Yes, the mother, because with the Prophet ﷺ said, أُمُّكَ ثُمَّ أُمُّكَ ثُمَّ أُمَّكَ ثُمَّ أَبُوكَ. So the mother has that privilege. Now, but is this, let's see, أخي, say you're, أعوذ بالله, some people's fathers are really mean. His father is mean. يعني, he's on your case, it's difficult, and you cannot really find this love. So what do? It could be the mother or the father. They're really tough to deal with. They make your life miserable. This is a fact. And we have to be factual. It's not living in la-la land and making everything seem, you know, nice and adorned. La-la-la. In real life, people, some people hate their parents. That's why you hear, some guy somewhere in some state or some country killed his own parents. He shot them dead. Some wild news that you say, how could someone do this to his parents? What do you do in this case? Do you still love them or not? Still love them? MashaAllah, what dedication and faithfulness this is. The truth of the matter is, love in this regard is of two kinds. Natural love, the natural love which Allah instilled in our hearts towards our parents, this one you can't avoid. You understand? You may dislike or hate a particular conduct or behavior in your parents, but to be able to eliminate the natural love which exists is not really possible. In very rare cases, someone can get rid of that. The natural love is there. Now, there's that love which is based on compassion, on good treatment, on dutifulness towards them. That's another element of love. So even if the natural love was missing, does that mean that the love of being dutiful is exempt from this? Never. Never. So loving them in this regard is not, I'm not speaking about the natural love, I'm speaking about the love that the parents should receive as Muslim children. The one which is not negotiable. The one which is not optional. The one which is not based on how they treat you. This is something that is by default. And what we mean by that is being dutiful to your parents. The parents suffer a lot, and they suffered a lot for you to become who you are now. You might think it was a picnic or a joke, but it is not. How many of you are married? I don't want to get too personal. How many are married? Exactly. So you have no idea what it's like to have children. No idea what it's like to have children. No idea. You think, look, all you see nowadays is a Facebook. On Facebook, they have this little baby smiling with his mother next to him. And you say, "Oh, what a sweet couple." Yeah, that was only during that picture. Everything before and after, you have no idea what it was like. He just finished vomiting on the brand new carpet, and then he had diarrhea, which was kind of circulated all around the house. And they just spent the last 3 hours in the hospital waiting for the doctor to be available. And the list goes on and on until they took that happy moment picture. And this is the only part that you saw as a single person. When you actually get married and have children, and I'm not trying to burn you out early on here, inshallah, in the next couple of days we'll be dealing with how to exactly manage that. But I'm just saying, keeping it real, once you have children, you realize that it's not that much of a picnic. There's a lot of responsibility and suffering for the children to become of age and so on and so forth. So you have to realize that in order to realize what your parents have done for you thus far. So they deserve this kind of love. Okay? Again, there's a special lecture about this very topic, the rights of parents. You can also go on YouTube. The channel is One Way to Paradise. But if you just want to cut through the chase of going through all the uploaded videos on the channel, then type, "So in them, do struggle." The title of the lecture is, "So in them, do struggle." It's a whole lecture about the rights of the parents and how we're supposed to treat them in Islam. Next in line after the parents should be who? And don't say my girlfriend.
Teachers.
Huh? Teachers. Teachers. Man, are you saying this because you're in school? You don't have any teachers here, man. Don't worry. No, actually he's right. Maybe, hey, wait a second. I'm just trying to get on your case. It could be teachers, huh? Who teach you good things and everything, right? But let's skip the teachers because it may seem like we're trying to, you know, bribe them here in the school. So teachers, okay, two thumbs up, you're fantastic. But I mean somebody else. The believers, very good, sir. Did you read these note cards before the lecture or what? MashaAllah, you guys got all the answers. Supposed to give me a couple of wrong answers so I can feel like I'm teaching you something. Otherwise, I feel like I'm being taught. Anyways, loving the believers. Huh? You have to love the believers. And Allah described the believers back then in the most beautiful description. He said, about those who tabawwa'u ad-dara wal imana min qablihim, yuhibbuna man hajara ilayhim. They love those who migrated to them. Now, usually when someone migrates to you, that means they're moving from their original location to yours. Okay, when a person visits you for 3 days, you already start scratching your head. You know, I mean, they're going to share the bathroom? Oh my God, I don't like anyone using my bathroom. What the heck is this? This guy is going to do this. You may love this person, but you start just having all these issues. 3 days, man, my privacy, my life, the things I usually do. You may be a gazzy person or something. And all this has to, you know, be put to an end once that guest comes around. You know, even though you may love this person, you say, yani, 3 days is a little lengthy. You want to stay in a hotel, there's a nice hotel next door. You know, I'll pay for you and everything, but, you know, just give me a break. Tayyib, so this is, imagine if someone said, "I'm doing hijrah." I'm going to leave back home and come, barakallah feek, and live with you. Huh? That may be a little heavy and difficult to swallow. Huh? Unless there's a particular level of iman that is shared by these two people, so that even these human restrictions are ignored. That you love for this person so much, what you love for yourself, that you will, that you favor their comfort over yours, and their well-being over yours, and so on and so forth. And I'm not hinting that you have to do anything because I'm a guest here. Huh? Next thing you know, I go to a first class and have a better hotel. I don't need none of that stuff. I'm just saying how the situation is. Some people misuse da'wah for personal benefits. Anyways, so the Sahaba, the Muhajirin, the Ansar, they had this. It's very difficult to understand this. يُحِبُّونَ مَنْ هَاجَرَ إِلَيْهِمْ. And then Allah Azza wa Jal said that what? وَيُؤْثِرُونَ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ وَلَوْ كَانَ بِهِمْ خَصَاصَةً. They favor others over themselves even though they are in need. Yeah, that's what altruism is. You know, being an altruist. That's very difficult to do. So these people migrated from their homeland to them, and they love those who migrated to them. Why? Because they were all at a level of iman which we should strive to be at. Once we have it, then we can become like this. You know, we are one in the same. One in the same. My pocket is your pocket. Okay, it doesn't matter who pays for dinner, because we're, if you know, because some people are like this. When he's inviting you for dinner, okay, you can pretty much figure that it'll be the cheapest restaurant in town. Okay, if it's like Ful and Tamiz in Saudi, we have Ful and Tamiz, that's 2 riyals. Okay, it doesn't get any cheaper than this. Yeah, that's the minimum you can, the least you can pay. So when it's his turn to invite you, it's always Ful and Tamiz. And then when it's your turn to invite him, it's some fancy restaurant, and mashallah, he goes through the menu. Yeah, I want this one and that one over there. And let me try this one too, and dessert and one carrot juice. Yeah, Sheikh, this is barakallah fiqh, 250 riyals. When it was your turn for the dinner, we were eating Ful and Tamiz. So he only remembers, you know, how to enjoy himself on your expense. But a true believer will be worried about you, you know, the same way he would be worried about, if I cannot pay this money when I'm inviting you, then I don't really want you to pay when you're inviting me. So I would like to treat you equally. So we both, you know, we suffer the same, because we're, at the end of the day, we're one person. This is what iman will do to individuals. Okay, next. If you guess this one, I might just get up and leave. So just give me a wrong answer deliberately, barakallah feek. Or actually guess it. No, ma fi mushkila. I'll accept. Spouse. Ya Sheikh, qasam billah, it says spouses. You drink some water, man. What do they teach you in this school, huh? We don't have any psychic people here, you know. Alhamdulillah. طيب. Spouses, yeah. Yeah. This is like way out of fashion now, you know. But, you know, I have to keep it, you know, old school. Yeah, we're supposed to love our spouses. Now, of course, you're not married, so this is irrelevant to you. And I will not discuss it now, because in the lectures tomorrow, inshallah, or tonight and the night after, we'll be dealing with exactly what is intended in terms of the relationship between the spouses. Excuse me, but until then, we can skip the spouses and move on to what? Who's next? Children, ah. Children with the spouses. Relatives with the parents.
I have a question.
Question?
Is it okay?
No, we have to finish.
The end?
Okay. Yes. No, we have to finish this point, because this is like the crux of the... Next in line is no one. And you're like, what? Come on, man. How could you? You know, what about those of us who are in love, but we're not married? You know what I mean? I mean, I know I love this, you know, lady that, you know, I've been chatting with for the last 7 years. But how could you say that there's no love? Islam doesn't recognize any other love. Khalas, love is, you know, Allah and His Messenger and the parents and the believers and the spouses, and then it ends. Is that true? No, it is not. Actually, it is not. there is another form of love towards the opposite gender. I'm not speaking about friends or anything. Yes, a man loving a woman, or a woman loving a man. Is there anything wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that?
No, it's what you do.
Don't give me a long answer. I'm asking one. I need a yes or no. Is there anything wrong with that?
No.
How about you? From the ladies' side, and we don't have to look. When I say ladies, don't, oh, because this is a common problem. Say, ladies, okay, yeah, ladies. Okay, I'm right here. From the ladies, you think anything wrong with a woman loving a man or a man loving a woman? Are the ladies still here or did they leave? No one's going to answer? ما في مشكلة. No problem. You, brother? Everybody says, okay, maybe you guys are in love already, that's why. Hey? No. Hey. Be careful, it's Valentine's. Huh? Now we'll deal with that in a little bit, inshallah. Actually, there's nothing wrong with it. It's the way Allah created us. We have to acknowledge these things. You see, there are two extremes. One extreme is have fun. Okay, you live once and you know what I mean? And khalas, so... Huh? Without Bismillah, huh? Because you cannot say Bismillah. And that, if they say, if you want to know whether something is halal or haram, see if you can say Bismillah before it. Like try before lighting up a cigarette, say Bismillah. And like you just can't do it. You know, can't say Bismillah and light a cigarette. Something's wrong in the equation. You know that smoking a cigarette, there's something wrong with it because you can't say Bismillah before it. But anyways, that's one extreme. And the other extreme is, la, no, abad, mafi love, and you know, you guys have to keep your limits and so on and so forth, and tayyib. And Islam is right there in between. Islam recognizes and acknowledges that love may develop between two individuals. However, Islam has certain restrictions to keep this love from becoming destructive. That's it. You can have feelings, but you have to have control and discipline with the feelings. Once you have the feelings without control or discipline, you're bound to destroy yourself and others. And if someone were to say, how could that be? We say, very easy. Two married couple. Okay? This is the man, I'm guessing, because he's taller. And this looks like more like a woman anyways. Huh? Like they say, like a Coca-Cola bottle. The man and the woman are married. Hello? And here's some other dude. Some guy, short guy, wearing a brown thobe. Now, isn't it possible that this lady may feel attracted to this man? Possible or impossible? Is this something that has to be controlled and disciplined, or should just, you know, we feel this way? Come on, give us a break. Would you find anyone on earth who would tell you, no, if once these feelings generate, you have to follow your feelings and your instincts or whatever, and you just go with the flow? No one will ever say that. No one will ever. They will say, my friend, you have a family, you have a marriage contract, and you're binded by this marriage contract, and there are people who will be harmed by this action of yours. So even though you may generate certain feelings, you have to be able to contain them. Otherwise, a lady may be with a new husband every other day. Because she will leave this guy and love this one, and then this one comes around and he's more orange than the coffee, and say, oh yeah, this guy is a little better, and then the microphone gets it, and then you're just, you know, going around. This is not life anymore. This is a moving vehicle that cannot find a parking spot. I'm just going around, you know, trying to find a spot. No, you have to settle down at some point in time. Therefore, if we all agree that once two are married, regardless of what emotions they may have, they have to control themselves, then in the same light we say, if you're not married, the matter is even worse. If you don't control and discipline yourself, then the matter may be even worse. Therefore, it is never justified to act upon this love. You can have the love which naturally happens. Love is something that you often cannot control. But remember that love could be a sickness. It could be a disease of the heart. You understand? Unless one treats it. For example, some people are naturally attracted to children. Pedophiles. They are, and some genders are attracted to equal gender. Men love men and women love women. Now we all know that this is not necessarily something that is normal. And these people have to be able to control this form of love which they have developed, and it becomes a disease of the heart unless they treat it properly. So then, what's going on here? So if we don't understand this, we will fall into the trap of shaitan when it comes to this love. You may fall in love with someone because of some interaction that happens accidentally or a glance. You know, it may be someone who's your type, as they say. And then, you know, it's like love at first sight, you know, or second sight, depends on how, you know, if you're wearing glasses or not. Because people who wear glasses sometimes have to, you know, look a few times before they see. But regardless, it could be one of these things. Tayyib, and so if now that you have developed this form of love, the question is, what do you do? What do you do? You have feelings that it's difficult for you to contain. And we say there's only one solution in Islam, which is what? Marriage. Khalas. If marriage is not an option, sometimes you have, you know, her parents are tribal and you are from this tribe or from this country and they only want to give their daughter in marriage to someone from the same tribe or country, or they only want a dentist and you are a pediatrician, and some funny stuff. People have, you know, all these weird standards. He has to be tall with a wavy hair. And yeah, Sheikh Shouz, you're choosing someone from a magazine? Nah, khalas, you know, he's a human being, he walks on two legs and he functions and the rest of the body, and the rest is history. You know, love doesn't know all these boundaries. Ala kulli hal, they put all these restrictions that make it technically impossible for sometimes two people to get married. If you know that this is the case, drop it like a bad habit. Just forget it. Because if you were to act upon this love, specifically if there's a mutual feeling from the lady, then you will be torturing yourself. Now, you know people who gone sick because of love. He stopped studying, doesn't do homework anymore, the whole time he's daydreaming, huh? While people eating lunch, you know, everybody's eating and he's just sitting there, you know, he puts the fork in his ear sometimes and, you know, he puts the juice on his head. He thinks he's shouting instead of drinking. He says, what happened to you, man? Wallahi, this wallahi, Allah hadiya. He said, calm down, ya Hajj. What's going on, man? You know, you're going to ruin yourself like this. Next thing you know, he's so skinny, he disappears. One time he walks, you just see clothing falling on the floor. What happened? Wallah, fulan, mashallah. He fell in love and we gave him a couple of weeks and he's gone. If we don't treat it properly, then this is what happens. People go crazy. They fall into this very serious sickness in terms of love. And where do you think Valentine came from? This whole Valentine that people just, you know, become so you know, careless about celebrating, and it became some, you know, just whatever. If you knew the roots of this thing, you would be repelled. The roots of Valentine go back to the Roman gods. Roman gods. The Roman god of agriculture. And they used to have a festival for celebrating that in mid-February, where they would slaughter goats. The men would slaughter goats and dogs. And then they would keep their blood. Then they would get the heads of these goats and they will dip him in the blood. Then the women of the town would all line up, and the men would go by and will slap them with these heads of goats, deliberately getting this blood on them, because they believed this will make them fertile. This will increase the chances of fertility. And later on in the day, they would put the names of the men in a bucket and the names of the women in a bucket, and then they will kind of draw names, and any two names that were there would... Okay? Can you imagine this? It's some crazy stuff. So they would become the couple for the night. And they may extend that contract if they found it necessary. That's where it came from. Then it was adopted by, Saint Valentino or Valentin, so whatever his name is, from Christianity, from the church, who was under the Roman oppression. They would not allow the soldiers to get married because they believed married soldiers were less effective than non-married soldiers. So they prevented the Christians from marrying, and he would join men and women behind, without the knowledge of the Roman leaders. So they caught him and they executed him on the 14th of February. And so the day was named after Saint Valentine because of that which he did. So you find that it's a Roman tradition which was picked up by the Christians, and then, it made it all the way up until now. Now, of course, it became a business. It's all about chocolate, it's all about flowers, it's all about roses, it's all about red. Many, many flower shops would have been out of business if they did not have Valentine. They actually, the whole year, they're barely paying the rent, and in Valentine, they make some profit. So it became a materialistic, celebration altogether. So we asked the question that if this is how love is manifested, if love is manifested in physical pleasure and meeting some random lady, and I saw this just recently. This lady was sitting there eating her breakfast or whatever, and she's half dressed, and the waiter is sitting there having these lengthy conversations with her, which appeared to be a form of harassment. Yeah, you don't have a waiter at the restaurant carrying a half an hour conversation with you while you're trying to eat breakfast, unless there's something unusual in the whole thing. And what could be the reason that this happens in a morning like this, for example? Because it's Valentine and the person feels bad that he doesn't have a Valentine. Oh, I don't have anyone. Let me just find anyone. So, push comes to shove. You go online and you put, a handsome man, 23 years old, looking for blah, blah, blah. And you find 100 ladies who will fit the description. And you find someone who you can love for the day. But this is all faking. This is all fake. It's all fooling oneself into something that is not really genuine. So we have to realize the traps of the shaitan in this regard. To end this lecture, I have a few questions to the brothers and sisters. I have them actually written down. They call them the WH or the questions. Sisters, what are you wearing? Okay? What you're wearing, and I'm not speaking to anyone in specific. I didn't see any of you or what you're wearing now, so don't think that I'm targeting you. I'm speaking generally. What you're wearing could either simplify or complicate your life and the life of others. If you dress a particular way, wherein there's modesty, then naturally you'll be avoiding, and getting rid of many of the possible harassment that would otherwise come to you if you dressed a particular way. And that will complicate your life and the life of others. So dressing modestly in general is a form of protection for both the lady herself from unwanted, approaches from men, because men are weird like that. If they see a lady dressed a certain way, they think that she did this for them. I'm telling you right now, flat out, how men think. A man thinks if you're dressed a certain way, you may be doing it because you love to look pretty and because you blah, 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 and you have all these 100 reasons, which the men don't recognize any of. They don't recognize any of them. They, in their mind, is you're dressed a certain way. Okay, you want something from me, and so therefore, let me try to give it a shot. That's just the way men think. It's weird, but it's the truth. Okay, you don't have to ask them personally. I'm telling you on their behalf. Not these guys, any guy in the world. That's just the way the mind of a man works. They appreciate beauty and that you have your reasons, but at the end of the day, they cannot look at it any other way, because that's how Allah created us. And women may have a similar feeling as well regarding men. So this is a mutual thing. So what you're wearing, whether brothers or sisters, obviously, but sisters have more of some restrictions in this regard, it saves you a lot of headache. It saves you a lot of headache for yourself and for the men. The next question is, where are you looking? Looking freely without lowering the gaze will bring about attraction. People can fall in love more easily than you think. And love begins with a glance. It begins with a look. The attraction begins right there. So that's why Islam teaches both men and women in this regard to lower their gaze. Not to look straight into the lady, because looking at the lady for so long may eventually develop a form of attraction. It's just a normal thing. And so the more the brothers and the sisters don't have to lower their gaze, by the way, unless they find some attraction, according to the most common opinion of the scholars. That brothers cannot look at women, period. But ladies can look, provided that there's no feeling. If she sees that she has some attraction towards this man, then she lowers her gaze similarly. Thirdly, the third question is, what are you saying? What are you saying? Flirtatious type of speech is disastrous. Yani, a woman can pick up the phone and say two words and the man is done. She's the one he's been looking for all his life. Never seen her number. She does two words a particular way, and ladies know what I'm saying. The way they speak, the choice of words, the tone of speech. Two words is enough to put a man in the grave. And so therefore we say to the sisters also and the brothers, what are you saying? You know, we have to observe the limitations in this regard. Otherwise, it will open a door for that kind of, you know, crazy wild love, which cannot be controlled before marriage. And then the last question is, where are you going? Where are you going? You know, you're a student. You have to achieve goals. You have to mature. You have to become successful. You have to meet your parents. You know, hopes and wishes in regards to yourself. And then you have to get married eventually and have children and settle down. And for one of us to reach that point, there's a lot of sacrifice that has to be made. And that begins with avoiding this kind of, you know, love which is unhealthy. So we said, if you wind up falling in love with someone, then go for marriage ala tul. Go for marriage instantly, because that is the only true solution. And it could be before you graduate. It could be before you start making an income. It could be before what the people want. Allah knows what will happen. But then, if it doesn't happen, we have to know, prioritize. Are you willing to compromise your education and your success and your well-being in the future? And most importantly, your religious commitment and your faith in Allah and hellfire and paradise. Are you willing to compromise all of that because of some you know, love that you've developed for some stranger? Is that really a wise decision that one of us makes? I mean, when we say paradise and hell, these are some serious options. Some crucial decisions we have to make. And sometimes one of us will deliberately sacrifice and compromise entering paradise and will choose the hellfire in order to have some fun. But that's never wise. So in conclusion, the only solution is marriage. If you wish to know exactly what are the Islamic steps that have to be taken prior to marriage, and then if you wish to know after you get married, how do you deal and what are the rights that you have as a lady over your husband and the rights which the husband has over the ladies, then the lectures inshallah tonight and tomorrow night will be dedicated to these two topics. So we can elaborate further on that in these lectures. Even though you may not be thinking of marriage now, I think you being familiar with the information is ultimately beneficial inshallah as a foundation for the future. So jazakumullahu khairan for your patience and for, you know, being very much patient in my boring jokes and lengthy discussion. And if you have any questions, we begin with you, brother, then feel free to ask.
The last two we mentioned in terms of the hierarchy, you mentioned believers.
Yes.
And then spouses. So if your husband or wife is a Muslim, I don't understand why wouldn't they come first, because they are believers as well as they're...
Yeah, so they will get both. They will get both. They will get a love for being believers and the love of being a spouse. But the love of the being a believer comes first, because they may not be spouses and that love is still expected. Don't feel shy. We have coffee here. No need for shy is okay.
correction to
I could answer this now, or I can answer it in tonight's lecture.
Summary. For those who might not come tonight.
Why won't they come tonight? La abad. I don't accept. I'm just joking. Right. What are the limitations? Well, look, the limitations is keep you distance. Keep you distance in the sense that keep you distance in terms of what you say. Keep you distance physically, as in keep you distance. And you know, understand how easily humans can be moved emotionally. How easily humans can be moved. And so as men and as women, we have to realize these facts about the opposite gender, and then you will be able to decide best as per that individual you're dealing with how to deal with it. It's not all at the same level. You know what I'm with certain people, because there may be more of a tendency to be attracted to each other, then you have to observe even stronger limitations. And with others, it may not be the case. It could be, you know, someone who's like an old lady or teacher or something of the sort, where such thing, there's no ground for a mutual attraction. And so these barriers kind of go down accordingly. So the more you are young and healthy and so on and so forth, the more, the higher the walls which you have between the two genders. And the more you have other reasons which will, you know, differentiate between the two, then the less the barrier. So it really depends. Yes, brother.
How about a brother and a sister that are working on something academic? Whether they're studying together or working on a project, somewhere in a public area there, in a library, for example, what does Islam say about this?
That's tough business, man. You know, I mean, look. Okay, a brother and a sister, or you say in a public area. Are there other people on the table, or they're just not hiding?
Definitely not hiding.
Yeah, but see, they're around. But see, man, you know, love doesn't know this. Love is in a look or in a word. I mean, what I'm saying is it doesn't close the door. It doesn't close the door of an a feeling or attraction existing. You see what I'm saying? Once a man and a woman are there, then there's a potential. We understand that some people say friendship and they're only friends and I would never think about them this way. You know, we know this. We've heard it. But the funny thing is that they have a video on YouTube, which I saw, in somewhere in America, by the way. All of them are non-Muslims, right? And they asked the lady, do you think that this friend of yours, you know, is that someone that you would ever go out with? And she was like, oh, no, never. You know, I don't think he would even ever be attracted to me. And they asked the men the same question. And I think 90% of the men said that, yes, they would go out with her. That lady who was swearing that no way, we're only friends. So this is fact from, you know, men that are non-Muslim, just so we will know. So even though a sister may be innocent and she may not really care about this guy and she's just trying to be academic, for the man, it's difficult. For the man, it's difficult not to fall into that trap. He's just keeping it real. Therefore, that doesn't really close the door. That's why there's email. There's the answer. Thanks. Are the sisters allowed to ask, or are they grounded?
Yeah, they can ask.
If you want to ask, ask. In the meantime, brothers, any questions? In the meantime, I'll tell you the shortest joke in the world. The shortest joke in the world is, there were two women sitting with each other saying nothing. Okay, that was one of them failed jokes. That doesn't happen. Well, the sisters are not laughing. No questions from the ladies?
What about purple?
What about what? Purple?
Perfume,
I'm sorry. I said purple is a nice color, but I usually don't wear it. Perfume? What about perfume? You have to smell nice. for the brothers. And for the ladies, you also have to smell nice as long as others don't smell that you smell nice. From among the brothers. And I have a lecture on YouTube just so that I will not burn myself out here before somebody throws a shoe at me and while I'm leaving the campus. There's a lecture on YouTube titled, Is This Sister Going to Jannah? Is this sister going to Jannah? It's an interrogative sentence. And there we discuss the rulings, the things pertaining to women. Women dress code, the women's eyebrows, women's, the perfume, the rights of women as well. And just so you won't think that it's all against women, our sisters are defended in many of the lectures, like the lecture Clothing for One Another, like the lecture Who's Got It Like You. All these lectures are pro-women and in defense of women against the attacks which they're always, getting from secularists and so on and so forth. So we're not, on the sister's case. So all the sound is not related to us. I thought these were the audience that were making the sound. Because if you don't hear any sound, that's a problem. Means I failed in my mission. It's like, when is he going to finish? Any questions? No questions from the ladies. Okay, we'll call it a day then. Jazakumullah khair. We'll see you inshallah in the future. Try to come to the other lectures. Subhanakallah wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa ant astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.